The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Spiritual, and the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies, Satan, would have his sights on: a good, decent, powerful, influential country, the United States of America. If you were Satan, who would you attack in this day and age? There is no one else to go after other than the United States, and that's been the case for now almost 200 years. Once Americans' preeminence,
you're listening to Mick Santorum. Appearing on the pulpit without his guitar, playing Sympathy for the Devil, where he says Satan has set his sights on the United States of America. He's absolutely right, by the way. I agree with every word he said. Everyone's mocking poor Rick Santorum, but the fact of the matter is nothing that he said is false. Take a look at MSNBC. You could see Satan operating every second of the day. Take a look at the fakers on CNN. They're Satan. In fact, listen to clip 6 now of Rick Santorum, who's being mocked because he actually expressed what most of us know to be 100% true. Listen.
We all know that this country was founded on a Judeo-Christian ethic, but the Judeo-Christian ethic was a Protestant Judeo-Christian ethic. Sure, the Catholics had some influence, but this was a Protestant country, and the Protestant ethic, mainstream, mainline Protestantism. And of course, we look at the shape of mainline Protestantism in this country, and it is a shambles. It is gone.
Okay, right. Take a look at the Protestant church. Take a look at it. Is he wrong? Now listen to the next one of Rick Santorum.
Whether it's sensuality or vanity of the famous in America, they are peacocks on display, and they have taken their poor behavior and made it fashionable. The
right.
Corruption of culture, the corruption of manners, the corruption of decency is now on display, whether it's the NBA or whether it's a rock concert or whether it's on a movie set.
He's right. I don't know why everyone's mocking Rick Santorum. I mean, everyone's saying this destroyed his chances. I'm going to tell you something. I think that this speech speaks to the core issue in America right now, which is the culture rot, the soul rot, the rot of America, as exemplified by Barack Obama and the Demon Cats. We just have Air Force 6 flying over the studio. I opened the door to listen to it at Santorum. I'm going to tell you something else. Remember when the worst president in American history until this one was President Jimmy Carter? Remember him, the snake charmer from Georgia? When the snake charmer from Georgia was president, and along came an unknown movie actor named Ronald Reagan, the Democrats were high-fiving each other, saying, oh, thank God. Thank God we have a cultural conservative. We can easily defeat him. How did that work out for them? Now, the reason Romney is slipping in the polls is because he stands for apparently nothing. I've said to you, I like the man personally, but what's there to like if you don't know what the man stands for? He's playing it so close to the center that people are not rallying behind him. What does he stand for? What, he's a nice guy in a nice suit with a nice wife and nice kids? Great. Great. Let him go run an Amway dealership somewhere. You know, or him and McCain can open up a Buick dealership in Mongolia together. The Mitt John, because in Chinese, Mitt John is an interesting symbol. It means car that doesn't run well. A U.S. general has apologized for the burning of Qurans by troops in Afghanistan. Now, you got to hear this sound. I don't even know if I'm ready for this one. It's getting crazier by the day. NATO commander in Afghanistan, U.S. General John R. Allen, gets up and genuflects because apparently some coded Qurans, the Qurans were apparently contained some secret messages or whatever from one terrorist to another. Just as they often hide in mosques to kill our troops, they often slip messages to each other inside of their Bible in their holy places. And so the military, you know, wanted to defend itself and got rid of these coded messages in these books. Well, of course, the lunatics went crazy in Afghanistan. And here is one of our leading generals in clip one.
To the noble people of Afghanistan, salamu alaikum. I'm General John Allen, commander of the International Security Assistance Force. I've ordered an investigation into a report I received during the night that ISAF personnel at Bagram Air Base improperly disposed of a large number of Islamic religious materials, which included Qurans. When we learned of these actions, we immediately intervened and stopped them. The materials recovered will be properly handled by appropriate religious authorities.
That's very sensitive when you think about it. It's a sensitive statement. That's what we need, is a sensitive general at this time. Because as you well know, the other side handles churches and Torahs with utter respect and, you know, with utter sensitivity. For example, when the Muslim fanatics are burning a church to the ground, they do it sensitively. When they cut off a Jew's head with a rusty knife, they do it in a very sensitive and appropriate religious manner, as you can remember the screams of Daniel Pearl. So this is a very, very good step that our generals are now on their hands and knees praying to the people they're supposed to be killing. It gets even worse. Listen to the next one from our general.
We are thoroughly investigating the incident, and we are taking steps to ensure this does not ever happen again. I assure you, I promise you, this was not intentional in any way. And I offer my sincere apologies for any offense this may have caused.
Okay, give him the last one of the great general.
My apologies to the President of Afghanistan. My apologies to the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. And most importantly, my apologies to the noble people of Afghanistan. I'd like to thank the local Afghan people who helped
Sorry.
Us identify the...
Sorry, I was laughing at a cartoon I was watching during this. All right, turn them on. This is the best we can produce now in the military. Now, would you want your son to serve in Afghanistan knowing this is the commander? This is the commander. He's apologizing. And to the noble people of Afghanistan, they're all noble. We're not noble here in America. Apparently, the only people who can be noble to a general who works for Obama are in Afghanistan, Pakistan, etc. But there it is. The media ignored, Jeremiah Wright, who was the most horrendous, hateful, anti-American preacher imaginable. Well, not imaginable, but pretty bad. And Obama sat at his feet for 20 years. And all of the vermin in the media who were running all over poor Rick Santorum for speaking the truth ignored Jeremiah Wright. It shows you what happens when you live in a country where the government media complex is really all present. Worse than Big Brother, as Orwell predicted, is the government media complex. So I could do politics. I have other stories to tell you as well. I can regale you with some other stories. For example, last Monday, that was yesterday, was President's Day. You used to know it as Washington's birthday, but the communists eliminated the name Washington from the birthday. They eliminated the name Lincoln from the birthday that followed, and they bunched them together so that you might think that Obama or Bill Clinton is in the same league as George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. And so they named it President's Day so that you wouldn't get confused that there are differences between various presidents. At the same time that they've generically created a name of a holiday called President's Day, they have now gave a holiday to the name of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Not Ethnic Day, not Civil Rights Day, but Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Now, how does that figure? Why would they eliminate Washington's name and Lincoln's name, but force you to have a Martin Luther King Jr. Day? I think you can pretty much figure it out. The same mindset that calls the people of Afghanistan noble, the same mindset that apologizes for various and sundry, the same FBI that has removed training documents which contain any statements about Islam that are true. For example, the FBI, because they were forced to do so by the Muslim pressure groups that have penetrated our intelligence agencies. You ready for this one? There were materials in the FBI training files which included a graph that tracked followers of the Bible, Torah, and Quran over hundreds of years. And in this training manual at the FBI, the graph showed that devout followers of the Torah and the Bible were becoming less violent over time, while devout followers of the Quran were remaining as violent in 2010 as they were hundreds of years ago. Now, why is that something that the FBI needs to hide? You talk about revisionist history. Is there anything false about that? No, of course not. But now they have various and sundry advisors. For example, a fine gentleman by the name of Salam al-Mariati, president of the so-called Muslim Public Affairs Council. I don't know what Salam al-Mariati's name was before he became Salam al-Mariati or before he worked at the Muslim Public Affairs Council. However, he is now advising the FBI on what their counterterrorism policy should be. In fact, al-Mariati, whoever he is, attended the most recent meeting with Robert Mueller of the FBI and urged that the FBI seek more feedback in the future when developing its training guidelines on Islam. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. From sea to shining sea, it's the savage nation. So how do you feel about the U.S. general apologizing for what allegedly happened in Afghanistan? I mean, there are various and sundry reports of what this was. The International Security Assistance Force personnel at Bagram Air Base found Qurans that had coded messages in them, and they burnt them because they didn't want the subterfuge to go on any further. And instead of saying that, the general apologizes for the forces. 1-800-449-8255. We'll also have an update for you about the declining American student. As I said to you, Monday was President's Day, and many children were taken out of school for the entire week after they got their lessons on global warming, which you know doesn't exist. And then they had their lessons on America bad, Europe good. They got their lessons on how to put a condom on a cucumber. They got their lessons on why the church is no good. They got their lessons on why the traditional family is something to spit at. They were taken on vacation for an entire week, while in China, in the fifth grade, they're teaching them elementary calculus. Our students are licking ice cream cones on Ritalin in Boca Raton. I'll be right back. Savage.
A spiritual war. And the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies, Satan, would have his sights on. A good, decent, powerful, influential country. The United States
right.
of America.
I don't understand why Santorum's being attacked by everybody. What has he said that's not true? In other words, either you have a party that stands opposite to the atheistic party of the Democrats. The atheist, the socialist, whatever you want to define it as is true. So the opposition party should stand for something different, possibly more traditional American values, if you want to put it in those terms. So why is Santorum being mocked because he says Satan has set his sights on the United States of America? Why would a man, even Rush Limbaugh, who's resting not on his laurels but on a haystack, Rush Limbaugh's resting on his haystack, is now attacking Rick Santorum. I don't understand that. Why is that a joke? Why is this a joke? Why is this a joke? I think Santorum is right. And I think that anyone who attacks him is not seeing this for what it is. This is primarily a Christian nation. The churches are filled with parishioners who are screaming for preachers and pastors and rabbis in the Jewish side to speak the truth, and they don't get it. They don't get it at all. They get mumbo jumbo, and they don't get anything that they really want. They don't get the true stuff that they're going to the churches for. So I frankly think it's good. I don't care that the liberals are having a heyday with it. I think it's going to work against them. I understand that they would get excited by this because they are the devil. I understand that they relate to this by Santorum because they know he's right. And so where's the mockery here in Santorum? Now, is Santorum more electable than Romney? You know, at this point, everyone says no. He's not electable at all. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure of that. As I said to you, I got to repeat something from presidential history that you probably haven't heard on any other show because they don't know anything that occurred further than a week ago. back in the day when Jimmy Carter ran America off the ground, the worst president in American history until now, Jimmy Carter, a far-left loono, just absolutely incredible, the worst economically, militarily, national security, the worst. Along came Ronald Reagan, and the left was high-fiving each other all over the DNC. They were saying, oh, thank God the stupid Republicans have picked a right-winger to run against Carter, this unknown movie actor. We can mock him. And they started to mock Ronald Reagan, remember? So you never know what could happen when you get someone who actually believes in what he's talking about, as Rick Santorum does. So I'm not so sure Santorum should be counted out. In fact, I count him in. The problem here is that Romney should be saying these things in more eloquent, in a more eloquent manner. He could parse some of this. He could parse it off. Let's put it to you that way. That's a fancy way of saying he can spin it, but say the same thing. He could feed the conservative base what they need to hear, which is reality. Let's put it to you that way. We are also talking about the other topics of the day, and there are many. There's unlimited topics. What a news day this is. And the children are out of school in America apparently for an entire week on the East Coast, so they can go on another vacation. The Chinese are teaching their kids calculus in the fifth grade, elementary calculus, while our children are on skateboards licking ice cream cones and taking Ritalin. I can't believe I see this. Once again, they're off on vacation. Restaurants and streets are packed in South Florida with the screaming children who are on vacation for an entire week, not for a day. This was not President's Day weekend. This is President's Week. Another excuse for the overpaid teachers to take another week off to see if they can sue the school district for not giving them a large enough pension. Astounding. I also have a story for you. I have a friend who has a super yacht, a mega yacht, who told me a story about inviting his poor relations aboard and what they did when they came to dinner. We'll have that for you later on, how poor relations behaved aboard my friend's super yacht when they invited when he invited them to dinner. Very interesting.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We got the Satan Santorum speech, which unto itself, there's nothing in it that's controversial, in my opinion. To anyone who's religious, there is a good and there's evil, and there is Satan. And anyone who watches a movie and doesn't see the influence of the devil is not watching movies. Anyone who doesn't see the sewer pipe that comes out of Spielberg's mind and Katzenberg and Ratzenberg and Hatzenberg and Matzenberg and doesn't understand that Hollywood lives off evil, as entertaining as it may be, it feeds evil. They have a sewer pipe in Hollywood that goes into everyone's brain around the world, and they pump their garbage from their sewer pipe. So what would you call that? An influence for good? I don't think that he's wrong about that. Now, going back to the so-called burning of the Qurans in the Bagram airfield north of Kabul in Parwan province, it turns out that these books were used by incarcerated detainees, terrorists in other words, who were once incarcerated at the Bagram Air Base. And the books had notes in them. So you understand how prisoners work, don't you? Prisoners in our institutions in America use religion as a weapon to get over on the authorities. They use, very many of them use religion as a weapon to get early release. They use religion as a weapon to say that they're good and they've converted, and then they pass notes in the Bible sometimes. You know that. I mean, ask anyone who works in the prison industry. So the same thing goes true there. What? Because it's a Quran, they couldn't be passing notes inside of it? So let's be clear about this. If we're at war, then we're at war. If we're not at war, then get the hell out of Afghanistan. I don't understand what we're doing there. Do you? And if you listen to the NATO commander apologizing, it's astonishing to listen to U.S. General John R. Allen. It's worth playing again.
To the noble people of Afghanistan, salamu alaikum. I'm General John Allen.
He's got a good accent. I got to tell you, holy, that's a pretty good accent. It's not an American saying salam aleikum. I mean, this is pretty good training that they've given him. This guy's gone through the Rosetta Stone version of Arabic. Can we play that again? I want to hear how he says it. I want
to
relearn
to the noble people of Afghanistan, salamu alaikum. I'm
very
General.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Now listen to clip three now.
My apologies to the President of Afghanistan. My apologies to the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. And most importantly, my apologies to the noble people of Afghanistan. I would like to thank the local Afghan people who helped us identify the error and who worked with us to immediately take corrective action.
This is a general? This is something you'd expect from a corporate suit. But is there a difference today between top-ranking officers and corporate executives? No. No. Unbelievable. How do you feel about this, being an American? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about Santorum speaking about Satan? How do you feel about these things? It's an interesting question. So if I play for you what the Afghan Muslims screamed after these Qurans were allegedly burned, even though they were Qurans, they were used, according to what I have read, to pass messages by former internees. Remember, they didn't break into a mosque and burn Qurans. These were used by prisoners of war, in essence. The translation is, the Muslims are rioting, calling for the removal of Jewish infidels on their soil. Listen to clip 24 to hear the sensitive sounds of the surrounding noble people of Afghanistan.
We Afghans don't want these Jewish infidels. They're the enemy of our soil, our honor, and our Quran. I urge all Muslims to sacrifice themselves in order to pull out these troops from this soil.
So now all of our troops are Jewish infidels. So Hitler would be very proud of this speech by the Afghans who are rioting outside the military base. Hitler is back. He's alive and well. And George Bush understood this, by the way. He tried to contain it, and he blew it. Rumsfeld's policy as a war planner failed. The next phase, I have a whole history of this whole war that we're in and how it's failed one stage after the other, has collapsed and failed around us. Well, the phase we're in now is the third phase. Have you heard this? I bet you never heard this because you only listen to talk radio. But we're in the third phase of the war for our survival, and we're losing. I don't know if you know this, but those who study these things, who are experts at it, have instructed me, and I have learned that phase one, phase two, phase three, we're now in phase three, and we are losing the global war on terror, losing it very badly. And you want to score the global war on terror? There's a fascinating article entitled From Liberation to Assassination in Three Quick Rounds by Andrew Bacevich. Now, I've got to tell you who Andrew Bacevich is before I go into these details. He's a professor of history and international relations at Boston University. And he's a brilliant man in terms of this, the war on terror and how we're failing at it, from liberation to assassination. We're now into the second decade of what the Pentagon has styled an era of persistent conflict. The war formerly known as the Global War on Terrorism, unofficial acronym, well, I can't even give it to you, appears increasingly fragmented and diffuse. Without achieving victory, yet unwilling to acknowledge failure, the United States military has withdrawn from Iraq. It is trying to leave Afghanistan, where events seem equally unlikely to yield a happy outcome. Elsewhere, in Pakistan, Libya, Yemen, and Somalia, U.S. forces are busily opening up new fronts. Did you know this? Yes, we're opening up new fronts in a war that we're losing. And he goes into the war, into the three phases of it. And he says, here's what we've suffered through thus far. One, the Rumsfeld era. One, liberation. More than any other figure, more than any general, even more than the president himself, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, dominated the war's early stages. Appearing for a time to be a larger-than-life figure, the Secretary of War, in the eyes of an adoring, a fickle neocon fan club, Rumsfeld dedicated himself to the proposition that in battle, speed holds the key to victory. He threw his considerable weight behind a high-tech American version of Blitzkrieg. U.S. forces, he regularly insisted, were smarter and more agile than any adversary. I won't read you the rest of it, but we know how that worked out. Shock and awe, you know what that was, right? Remember shock and awe? That was Rumsfeld's baby. And in each case of shock and awe, it gets off to a great start, with U.S. troops landing some swift and impressive blows. In either case, however, were they able to finish off their opponent, or even in reality, sort out just who their opponent might be. And so he says, unfortunately for Rumsfeld, the so-called terrorists refused to play by his rule book, and U.S. forces proved to be less smart and agile than their technological edge and their PR machine suggested would be the case. Indeed, when they were harassed by minor insurgencies and scattered bands of jihadis, they proved surprisingly slow to figure out what hit them. In Afghanistan, Rumsfeld let victory slip through his grasp. In Iraq, his mismanagement of the campaign brought the United States face to face with outright defeat. By the end of 06, shock and awe was kaput. Shock and awe was kaput. Round one came to an end. The Americans, rather embarrassingly, having lost it on points. Round two, the Petraeus era, pacification. I'll read you more of this later. I don't want to give it to you all in one gulp because you may not want to be listening to any of this, but it's not a very good prognosis when you have corporate, and I'm not anti-corporate, don't get me wrong, but there's a certain mentality at the higher levels of corporate America. These are usually not entrepreneurs. You have to understand how corporations work. An entrepreneur creates his own business. He has a different mindset than a CEO of a public company. The CEO of a public company is an A-kisser. He's a pogo stick jumper. He's a public relations figure. Nothing that he does is sincere. Everything he does is calculated along the lines of a politician. And so therefore, you have to understand what a corporate executive is today. They're not as brilliant as you may think. They're just good politicians in an era where people are risk aversive. And so we have the same thing now in the military. Now we've gone from round one with the Rumsfeld era to round two. I can speed it up right to the last phase instead of telling you what's coming. But, you know, the apology that you just heard, was that John Allen? I want to check who said that. Yes, NATO commander in Afghanistan, U.S. General John R. Allen. Do you know who he actually is? He sounds like a wimp, doesn't he? He isn't. See, this is what you don't know. John R. Allen is not a wimp. John R. Allen, if I'm not mistaken, is a former Special Forces hero. And yet, they've got him in a position where he sounds very much like a corporate president who is more interested in apologies than he is in victory. And so, therefore, we have to look at why these men behave like this once they get these jobs. 1-800-449-8255. Portland, Oregon, let's begin on the West Coast. Chuck, thank you for calling. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
What I don't understand is how the Afghan population became aware of the incinerator, the books being burned. How did that happen?
Well, I don't know how it happened. No doubt some of the workers at the Bagram Air Base who were burning them or who were around the pits saw it and reported it, and they didn't tell the whole story, which is that these were books. By the way, they weren't just Qurans. These were books and other materials that were in the cells of prisoners of war at that time. That's a very important distinction that has been left out of the press reports, Chuck.
Well, what I'm saying is that usually these things have to have a chain of custody, something that's accounted for. Everything that's taken from prisoners has to be accounted for. You're talking to a former military policeman, so I know a little something about that. So. You know, Dr. Savage, you'd be better off talking about the health benefits of blueberries right now on this one because it seems so far away that it's lost.
You think that my take on it is wrong?
No, it seems to me that the ship has already set sail for World War III, especially with Iran and everything going on. You'd be better off just talking about blueberries.
Well, in a way, you're right. I totally agree with you. In a way, you happen to be right. We're all sitting here waiting for a nuclear bomb to go off either inside our country, God forbid, or over Israel. There is no question in my mind that the Hitlers of Iran are going to launch a nuclear attack the minute they can, and it's going to come unexpectedly, and the Israelis will be sitting there saying, well, we're ready, we're ready, we're ready, we're ready. Or they will smuggle something into this country and detonate it in this country while we sit here and argue over Rick Santorum or Ron Paul or Mitt Romney. This is... Absolutely, we're living in a vacuum. We're like idiots living inside a vacuum.
It's disturbing to watch.
It is disturbing to watch, and it's even more disturbing to have to get up in the morning and decide to talk about it or not talk about it. You're absolutely right. I could talk about blueberries. I could talk about animal rights. I could talk about the slaughter of elephants. All of these stories are of some interest, but right now I think my country's life hangs in the balance like a loose tooth, and I don't know what else to do except talk about the realities of our military situation. I mean, right now, because this is in the news, it's not something I would do every day, Chuck.
Yeah.
But would you like to know about the health effects of blueberries?
Yes, I would. Actually, I had a bunch of blueberries this morning, and I thought about calling you. I'm glad I found a segue.
Well, okay, I'm going to talk about the health effects of blueberries because it's an interesting military-related question. First of all, you live in Oregon where there are wonderful blueberries. That you know, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, in World War II, and it's not a myth, RAF pilots would eat bilberry jam before going on a night flying mission. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Yes, and that's because the phytochemicals in blueberries increase their night vision. Blueberries have amazing phytochemicals in them, plant chemicals, and the British knew about this through folklore. And as I say, before the men went on night missions, they ate blueberry jam. So, I mean, the same holds true today. If you have vision problems, it's a very good idea to either eat blueberries, which I do all the time. I eat them as often as I can get them, especially organically grown blueberries. I'm not a big fan of pesticides myself. Or, yeah, and I don't take them, but there are products on the market with, you know, condensed versions of the blueberry active principles, which I'm not a big pill person with regard to the herbal stuff. Incidentally, I'd rather get it out of foods if I can. But anyway, it's very good for night vision. I'll tell you something else. This is an interesting side story. Many a moon ago when I was in the nutritional field, I was very, very interested in pills as they relate to herbs. And there are some medicinal products out there that contain bilberry extract. Okay, the reason I don't talk about it is a lot of them are phony. They're fake. I had a doctor friend, great guy, whose mother was 92 and she was suffering from macular degeneration, Chuck. And I had seen literature which said that it can reverse some of the effects of macular degeneration. She took the bilberry pills for a number of months, and he swore to me, and this is one of the top doctors I knew. He was a Stanford graduate and a wonderful doctor unto himself. He swore to me the bilberry jam reversed some of her macular degeneration. So, Chuck, at the end of the day, if you ask old Doc Savage anything, you'll get a legitimate answer.
I appreciate it.
Enjoy your blueberries. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My apologies to the president of Afghanistan. My apologies to the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, and most importantly, my apologies to the noble people of Afghanistan. I would like to thank the local Afghan people who helped us identify the error and who worked with us to immediately take corrective action.
That's U.S. General John R. Allen, the head of U.N. forces over there, or NATO, whatever. U.S. General John R. Allen apologizing, genuflecting, for men over there who burned materials, including Qurans, that were used by prisoners, allegedly with notes in them that were being passed back and forth in the jail cells, and genuflecting. Now, the general himself, John R. Allen, has a very interesting background. He is a Marine who went to the Naval Academy, and he is the first Marine Corps officer inducted as a term member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, those are keywords to the small percentage of listeners to the Savage Nation who know who the CFR is. The Council on Foreign Relations is a notoriously New World Order, One World Government, internationalist organization that has deep ties to the government media complex, especially on the extreme liberal side. And so although he has some pretty good military experience, platoon and rifle company commander, jump officer, jump master at the Naval Academy. I don't see much actual on ground, according to his, I don't think he's out there in the field and shooting one, whatever. He has some, he has cojones, the guy's good. Nevertheless, he's obviously deeply tied into the political establishment, going way up into the CFR, which may explain his genuflecting with such superb control of the language, salam aleikum, the way he said it. I mean, he's very well trained in the local dialect. Fort Lauderdale, Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation from WFTL.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. It's a privilege to speak with you on the subject of Lieutenant General Allen. I wanted to share with you and the radio listeners that Lieutenant General Allen is essentially a careerist. He has a master's degree that prepared him to teach political science at the Naval Academy. He's got
right. I just said he's a member of the CFR. Did you hear that part of the show?
And you are correct. He holds some very impressive on-the-ground boot-earned distinctions.
Yeah, but the fact is he's a member of the New World Order, in plain English. He's one of them.
Exactly, Dr. Savage. You would expect nothing less from somebody that...
Absolutely. This is not a General Patton who was American through and through, right to his last red blood cell. This is a man... General Patton, let's go back to a General Patton who we all know, just by historical reference in the movie about him, played by George C. Scott. That era of General, or Douglas MacArthur, these men were red, white, and blue all the way through. Can you say the same thing for this new breed of corporate general?
Absolutely not. In fact, he is the general who said it was perfectly okay to put all the Navy SEALs on the Chinook that crashed.
Wait a minute. How do you know that it was he who put them on the Chinook? I really need to know this, Jack.
Okay. After this incident happened, you were correctly indignant with the very unsound military logic of putting all of these precious SEALs
on one old slow-flying Chinook and throwing them into a combat zone. Are you sure it was he who did it?
He was the one who exonerated the decision to place them all on...
But who made the decision? Was it some KGB hack from Harvard? Some girl from Harvard with a law degree who tells the generals what to do?
No, at his level, he would not be making those...
Yeah, but who did it? Who in the military killed our SEALs? Why has there been a cover-up?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Spiritual. And the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies, Satan, would have his sights on. A good, decent, powerful, influential country, the United States of America. If you were Satan, who would you attack in this day and age? There is no one else to go after.
He's right.
Other than the United States.
And that's been the case. I like Santorum more that they found this from 2008, his speech at Ave Maria University. Do you think this makes Santorum less electable or more electable that he actually dare talk about Satan unleashed in the United States of America? I mean, when you look at what Katzenberg, Ratzenberg, Matzenberg, Hatzenberg, and Spielberg have produced over the last 30 years, throw in some Martin Scorsese, you can't disagree with him. Isn't it all about the devil? Blood, murder, guns, drinking blood, devils, vampires. What is that, on the side of good or on the side of evil? So, I mean, there are people who believe that Santorum is correct, and they're the conservative base. They will come out for him. They won't come out for Romney. Romney will not get them to come out to vote for him. Maybe they figure. You see, Romney is a mainstream check pants country club Republican, and they assume that conservatives have nowhere else to go and they're going to vote for him. What they don't understand, apparently, because they all live in a bubble, is that the big deciding factor here is the turnout. And the base doesn't turn out for middle-of-the-road Republicans. They never have and they never will, not in modern times. That's all there is to it. I do this for a living. I know more than advisors do about what the American people think. And I also have a better stethoscope on the heartbeat of America than most of these paid political hacks. And I'm telling you that Romney is collapsing specifically because he's a corporate type of guy who won't say anything. So what's there to get excited about? That's why everyone's turning to an upstart like Santorum. You can joke all you want about him. So this was meant to smear him. I understand that. But I think it'll actually bring him up in the minds of the core rather than bring him down. Of course the left is going to go crazy because they are Satan. They are the Satan he's talking about. He ought to come out next and say that. Then we have the case of the accidental general or the apologetic general or the nice general, the NATO commander in Afghanistan, U.S. General John R. Allen, the first Marine Corps general in history to be granted, anointed as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Take that for what it is. Take it for what it is. We all know what the CFR is. All you got to do is look at the people in the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and in the media who are members of the CFR. I am not a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I am not a member of the Bohemian Club. I am not a registered Republican. I am not a registered Democrat. I have been an independent for my entire adult life. I'm not a Johnny Come Lately. The fact of the matter is, though, we know what's going on in this world. How do you feel about Santorum's references to Satan at Ave Maria University? Will it raise him up or drop him down in the polls, number one? How do you feel about U.S. General John R. Allen apologizing to the noble people of Afghanistan and genuflecting to these noble people who you will now hear in clip 24? Here are the noble people he apologized to in clip 24.
We Afghans don't want these Jewish infidels. They're the enemy of our soil, our honor, and our Quran. I urge all Muslims to sacrifice themselves in order to pull out these troops from this soil.
So apparently now, any man in the U.S. military is now an honorary Jew. They've all been granted a member of the Jewish religion. They're Jewish infidels to these noble individuals in Afghanistan that the general is referring to. Let's go to the callers. Joe in New York on WOR. Thanks for listening and thanks for calling the Savage Nation.
Hi, there's one way to explain the Ron Paul supporters. Basically, there was a guy named Jose.
Whoa. We're talking about Santorum. We're not mentioning the man with limited neurons.
Yeah. I was talking about Jose Delgado, the experiment.
Sir, Joe, are we talking about Rick Santorum? Bicycling around here, and every restaurant was full. I hate waiting. When I look into a window of a luncheonette, and I see six tables with the menus up in the air, and they haven't gotten water yet, do you think I'm going to sit down? So I bicycled over to a Subway, and I got a 12-incher for $5. Yeah, I don't know how they make any money. It was toasted. It was delicious. True, I limped around. My right knee hurt afterwards. But no, it was very good. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I could eat at a Subway in the morning and on a yacht in the evening. That's the kind of guy I am. You give me a donkey, I'll ride a donkey. You put me in on a super yacht, I know how to dine on a super yacht. It's all the same to me. It's a matter of where you are and adapting to it. There's nothing wrong with a sandwich from Subway. What was that guy? How did he get on the show, Doug? First he talked about Ron Paul. Then he talked about Jose Delgado and electrodes. Hartford, Connecticut. Let's go to a totally different topic. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, thank you. Your story about your wealthy friend and his mega yacht and his unfortunate relatives struck a chord with me.
Well, I didn't say anything. I said, hold it now. Let me go back. I said, I'm going to talk about a friend who owns a mega yacht who told me what his poor relations did when he invited them aboard for dinner. So that was, I never said what they actually did, but tell me what happened with your relations.
Well, my mother married a wealthy gentleman when I was 18 years old, and we didn't know he was that wealthy at the time. He drove a Ford Escort. He owns two modest boats. They're 40 foot. One is a sailboat, one is a powerboat. He's been boating all his life. He introduced me to boating.
Right.
I grew up going to expensive restaurants, going on vacations to Rock Island,
You mean through the stepfather, right?
Through the stepfather. I am, you know, I am not wealthy enough to do this on my own.
No, no, but all right, but you inherited wealth through the stepfather. Fine. So what's the point of the story?
Well, here's my point. My family has, there are portions of my family who will not step foot on his boat, even though
They're too proud to go on his boat.
My mother has not been in her own sister's house since she married this gentleman.
Now, the sister doesn't have as much money, correct?
Correct.
And the poorer sister resents her, obviously?
There's a lot of envy.
Does the poorer sister expect your mother to give her money?
No, I don't believe she does.
So she's just resentful?
I think this speaks to why Obama's class warfare is so popular, even among people that you think are conservative. In my family, there seems to be a deep-rooted feeling that there is us, and then there is other people.
Now, what do you mean? There's a resentment for wealth? Is that more or less it?
Yeah, I honestly think so.
Well, I think that that's been true from the beginning of time, the haves and the have-nots. Isn't that true? That nothing's changed under the sun with regard to class envy.
But this man...
You know, I got to tell you, I was an American child like all the others. I went through the public schools in New York and Queens College. I had my typical education. It wasn't until I... wound up collecting plants in the Fiji Islands, Samoa, Tonga, and sitting in villages, and studied something about kinship and structure and family orientation, and then studied more deeply into the older books on anthropology, that I discovered that even at the lower levels of society, such as the so-called primitive societies, whether you go back to Boas or any of the other early anthropologists, they all behave in the same manner. In other words, there's a hierarchy within families and a hierarchy within a village. Those who have more wealth, whether it be in pigs in New Guinea at that time, or in America, those who have, you know, bigger houses, etc., are resented by those with fewer pigs or smaller houses.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I have learned more from this from my stepdad. And I'm still close to my own father. And they get along fine at family functions and whatnot. There's no resentment there. But I have learned so much from working in his company. I started at the bottom. I worked out in the steel shop. I shucked steel.
What is your main point about relatives? Is that there's a resentment for you and him because he had money and they don't?
There's a natural resentment when people see someone who has something more than what they have.
Of course, there's always been people who are jealous of the other man. You take a guy like Donald Trump. Why do you think he's hated by so many people? It's because they're jealous of him in plain English. He did better than them. So they say, oh, he's this, he's that, he did this, he did that. They're always jealous of successful people. Can you find anyone without money who admires anybody with money ever?
I do just because I know the story of how he got his money.
Well, there you go. It depends upon how you get your money. I mean, you're not a member of a criminal organization and you created a product or service or you worked your heart out to get your wealth. What's wrong with that? Explain it to me. I don't understand it.
My stepfather's father started a company as a welder.
Well, I can't go into all the details, but that's what it comes down to. You know, when you're poor, who would you rather hang with when you're poor? Other poor people? People poorer than you or richer people? If you have any brains, you try to hang around with people who are better than you, intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, and financially. That's how you grow in society. If, on the other hand, you want to devolve and work your way down the ladder of success, then hang around with people who have less than you or are spiritually less evolved than you or people who are emotionally more wrecked than you. Go into the rehab business so you can feel superior to them, and you will understand why so many people go into these businesses. They want to get over on other people. It's not because they really want to heal them. All is vanity. The Christian theologian was correct, or the Christian prophet, when he said all is vanity. So what are you going to do about it? Now, what can you do about the human condition other than live through it? Well, there's nothing under the sun that we can't talk about today on The Savage Nation. I'm having a good time, contrary to what you may believe. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Marine and Haditha killings discharged. God bless the Marines. I raised a lot of money for Colonel Chassani with your help, remember? We got him off the hook. He was on the hook for being a good commander. They try to hang him. Every one of the other Marines falsely accused in the so-called Haditha massacre has been found not guilty. It's cost millions and millions of dollars. That's what the U.S. military has done to its own troops since George Bush took power. Squad leader in Haditha killings discharged from Marine Corps. So there we are. Wooderich, age 31, received a general discharge under honorable conditions, as attorney Neil Puckett told the North County Times. Now, the charges against them were all based upon false reports put out by a Newsweek reporter, or was it a Time reporter who invented them all, who was working in cahoots with the terrorists. This is what our troops have to face over there. They may as well be reporting to Charlie Sheen in his heyday. 1-800-449-8255. Will Santorum do better or worse in the polls now that he's mentioned the S word? Let's go to New York, WOR. Harry, better or worse? What do you think?
100% for sure, better. And he has my vote. That's one thing for sure. You know, I wasn't sure with all the candidates, but now that once I see a guy speaking his mind, that's what gets me, and that, I think, will get everyone's heart in America, hopefully.
Who, you mean Santorum? But even if you don't agree with him about Satan, at least he's saying something.
I agree 100%. I don't agree with him on everything. And guess what, Michael? I love your show, but I don't agree with you on everything. But I only listen to you because you speak your mind.
Well, I understand. How are you going to know how to hone your own thoughts unless you meet someone who's willing to express his or her thoughts to you bluntly and honestly?
That's exactly right.
I mean, I grew up in a family where we argued, frankly. I grew up arguing over things. I come from a tradition of discussion that's quite loud. Let's put it to you that way. And in America, apparently, people get mad at you if you talk loud. They think there's something that you don't like them if you raise your voice.
You know,
especially, you know, there's an epidemic in this country right now of women who have been so sensitized by the feminist brainwashing that they're afraid of men who actually speak with a man's voice.
Well, I find it just opposite. I find that a woman wants to see a guy that will say...
No, I'm not saying. I have a friend who's Italian. He also has the same problem. His wife doesn't like him. His daughter doesn't like him. I said, why? He said, they say my voice is too loud. He said, what do you want from me? I'm Italian, from the old country. I said, welcome to the club. Clink, clink, clink. So that's why dogs exist. I mean, that's what dogs were invented for. They like when you talk loud. Now they understand you. You say something clearly and definitively, and the animal understands you. If you whisper to them and you get overly polite, how's a dog supposed to know what you actually feel? They don't trust you. I'm traveling right now. I'm just joking. I miss my dog. He was left home. Remember? He was bitten in the paw, the upper part of the paw. If he's listening, Teddy, I would like you to call in the show, 1-800-449-8255, and tell me how you feel this evening. I'm actually dreaming of my dog, you know. It's funny. It's being like it's a part of you, and he's not with you. Because I didn't want to fly with him. It's not fair to him. You think it's fair to a dog to take him on such a trip. It isn't. Then the flight back and the flight there, and he has to hold his bladder for 6 hours. Not fair to them. Better off in their own environment. So here we are. I mean, there's big stories in the news now. The Satan Santorum thing, that's going to hang around for a while. The general apologizing for the burning of materials, including holy books, in Afghanistan. You've got to remember the context so you don't get it wrong. Don't listen to the vermin in the media. These Qurans and other written and printed material were from the cells, the jail cells of the equivalent of prisoners of war. And there were writings in them, coded writings. And so the guards in charge burned them after the prisoners were released or gotten out of there.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, where it's always 1967. Welcome back to the program. I'm just doing that to get your attention. Music's beautiful. Of course, not even from the 60s, that music. Bobby Freeman, Do You Want to Dance? You have a problem with this, too? Maybe you should burn the record because it's got coded messages in it. It was written by Americans during a time when America was beautiful and people were proud to be Americans. Maybe you can go to the various and sundry intelligence agencies run by the Obama administration and seek to have 1950s rock and roll burnt in a large pile along with certain books that express an inordinate reverence for the U.S. military and for the government of that time. Maybe they can have some advisory councils put together by the geniuses from Harvard. I found an article. Do we still have it, the one you just mentioned, Beowulf, that I said I was going to read today? Then I said I better not because I don't think my audience can take it. But well, let me give you some of the headlines. High court to take up reverse affirmative action case, meaning they're going to look into how white people have been discriminated against by affirmative action. So you have to you have to reverse everything to understand what it says. Christie pitches increase in school aid and an income tax cut. Oh, this is an amazing story. Man faces jail after using gun to nab alleged robber. You will not believe this story, how twisted this country has become. New Hampshire man arrested for firing gun into ground while catching suspected burglar. I put it up on my website this morning. I could not believe this. A New Hampshire man who fired his handgun into the ground to scare an alleged burglar he caught crawling out of a neighbor's window is now facing a felony charge and the same potential prison sentence as the man he stopped. Dennis Fleming, age 61, of Farmington, was arrested for reckless conduct after the Saturday incident at his 19th century farmhouse. The single grandpa had returned home to find that his home had been burglarized and spotted Joseph Hebert, 27, climbing out of a window at a neighbor's home. Fleming said he yelled freeze before firing his gun into the ground, then held Hebert at gunpoint until police arrived. I didn't think I could handle this guy physically, so I fired into the ground, he told Fox News. He stopped. He knew I was serious. I was angry, and I was worried that this guy was going to come after me. No one was injured in the incident, but when the police arrived, they made two arrests. The homeowner was charged with, you'll never believe this, he's going to be arraigned March 20th on a charge of reckless conduct, which could potentially land him in a sentence similar to the one the burglar faces. I didn't know it was illegal to fire into the ground, but I had to make that guy realize I was serious, Fleming said. I've got a clean record. I really don't want to be convicted. Meanwhile, they're frightened that the man who was a single grandfather with 14 children doesn't have the money to defend themselves. Call seeking comment from the idiotic Farmington Police Department Chief Scott Roberge were not immediately returned. So how do you like that story? That's the country you live in today. He didn't even kill the guy. He fired into the ground. Can you believe this? The country you're living in, the difference? Not even defending. Here's another one from the genius in the White House. Here's another headline from the genius commander-in-chief. White House mulls aid for Syrians. Now, what does that mean, Syrians? The opposition to Assad. Assad is a brutal dictator and a murderer. However, the people he's opposing are probably more anti-American than he is. And yet the geniuses from Harvard, who have never fired a Daisy BB gun, so far as I can tell, are considering giving military assistance to the so-called Islamist rebels in Syria. That's your government at work. Let's go to another topic. We're also talking about Santorum. We're talking about this. We're talking about that. We also talked about wealth in families and what it does between people and the resentment it causes. The opposite, you would think, is why is it that if you're poor and broken down or you get into trouble with drugs, everyone in the family seems to love you? However, if you become a raging success, they hate you. They resent you. They don't want to talk to you. I mean, do you ever figure that one out? I know a guy who has a brother who's in and out of jail and rehab all the time because he's a junkie. And the family can't do enough for the drug addict. They can't wait to have him over to dinner. They sympathize with him. The brother who is a successful media figure, they hate him. They resent him. They don't even listen to him. They don't talk to him. They resent the fact that he rose above them through very hard work and talent. It's amazing. The world is nothing new under the sun. I don't think that's from the Bible. I think it's from reality. So we can talk about how what wealth does to families. It's the same thing with Romney. Why do you think that so many Americans are disaffected with Romney? It's because he's got wealth. They don't like wealthy people. The American people fundamentally at this stage in American history have become very sensitized to wealth, and they assume that everyone's Bernie Madoff. They assume anybody with money robbed it from them personally. I mean, there was a time people looked up to the rich, remember? Everybody wanted the Rolls Royce, and they wanted the big house, and, well, some still do, but by and large, people have given up on the quest for, as Thorsten Veblen wrote, conspicuous consumption. Don't think I didn't read it in college, you know, Thorsten Veblen. Thorsten Veblen, I read it in the 1950s, if you can believe it, my first year in college. Conspicuous consumption. Well, I was so impressed with that when I read it. Little did I know it was socialist professors brainwashing me. Say, he drives the Oldsmobile Rivia, whatever it was, the Oldsmobile Starfire. He's just a conspicuous consumer. I'm happy with my broken-down five-year-old car because Veblen would like me. I didn't know. You see, it was class warfare was going on at that time. It's always been going on. They were steaming me up as a poor working kid going to Queens College in the city of University of New York to believe that anyone who had anything more than my family did were just basically garish, overachieving, whatever, you know, the gold chain wearing. And they were right, actually. They were. Most of the people at that time. There's a way to have wealth and there's a way not to have wealth. You don't have to have the gold chain on the neck with the hair patches put on your wrists either. You know, I know them too, the deli man who made money, who invested properly in Microsoft at the right time. Take a look at what they become. Oh, my God, everyone knows them. I mean, it's a way to wear money, which is to not wear it at all, not let anyone know you have it. I said, no, you want to talk about money? It's a fascinating topic. Money may be the root of all evil, but as my mother said to me, God rest her soul, it's better to have money than no money. I mean, you know, I mean, that we all know, right? Well, it was written another way back in the Bohemian days, before my time. There was a well-known group of pseudo-bohemians. We used to call them pseudo-intellectuals in my day. Prior to that, they were the pseudo-beatniks, the pseudo-bohemians. And someone wrote about them that they'd all sit around espousing Karl Marx and putting down America. They'd sit with the drinks in their cafes in New York. And he said if anyone so much as flashed a dollar, they'd leap over the cafe hedge to see if they can grab a piece of it. He said that's what impressed them. I mean, he himself was an interesting guy. I forget his name. I remember reading that. It was in the New Yorker, actually, that I read it, long before they covered me in a profile. But once the New Yorker wrote a profile on Michael Savage, nobody wanted to refer to the fact that the profiles were, at that time, when I grew up, they were amazing. That only the elite were written about. That was a big deal in my life, by the way, just rambling on here. I don't know if I want to do about Syria or Santorum. I'd rather talk about blueberries than the war in Afghanistan. But I do, before the segment is up, I have to listen again to the U.S. general in the NATO commander, rather, General John R. Allen, because the way he says Salam Aleikum really impresses me. It's so beautifully alliterated. Let's hear the alliteration again of Salam Aleikum by the general.
To the noble people of Afghanistan, Salamu alaikum. I'm General John Allen, commander of the International Security Assistance Force. I've ordered an investigation into a report I received during the night that ISAF personnel at Bagram Air Base improperly disposed of a large number of Islamic religious materials, which included Qurans. When we learned of these actions...
All right, we got the picture. Bending over backwards again. They were throwing out the holy books and other writings and books and pamphlets that were in the cells of prisoners to get rid of them, because they didn't want them to fall in the hands of non-prisoners after they were released or whatever, because there were messages handwritten in them that the soldiers found, according to the reports I've read. So they burnt them. They got rid of them. Now already it's turned into an international incident with the sensitive, noble people of Afghanistan screaming about Jews again, that we want these Jewish infidels off our holy soil. That means that any Christian now is an honorary Jewish infidel. Anyone who wears the uniform is now a Jewish infidel. It just shows you the level of intelligence of the noble Afghanis. You know, you have to respect how intelligent these people are. You ask any liberal who goes into an ethnic restaurant, they bow down for a napkin or a glass of water. Let an ethnic restaurant waiter come over to an American liberal in America. I don't care what the city is. Have you ever seen liberal behavior in ethnic restaurants? How many times they say please and thank you? I never saw anything like this. For a napkin, they would get on their hands and knees and practically, may I have a napkin? Oh, thank you. Thank you. You ever watch liberals from like Berkeley, California leave an ethnic restaurant? It's something to behold. I mean, the first few times you see it, you feel as though you're in Brobbingdang. It's amazing to watch. But after about 30 years of it, you get used to the, but that's the same as the general just now. It sounds about on the same level as asking for a napkin or thanking a restaurant owner for a glass of water in a Chinese restaurant in the Richmond district. The owners look at them like they're crazy. They came in and bought a meal and spent money. And instead of the restaurant owner saying, thank you for coming, the white liberal gets on his hands and, oh, thank you. Oh, look at that, honey. A napkin. Look at that. Wow, look at a water. Oh, yes, thank you. Oh, it was so good. Thank you. The owner looks at him like they're out of their minds. But that's the beauty of living in Paris if you're Voltaire. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hello, Everett. It is great to be in Washington. Not Washington, D.C., in Washington State. And it is great to be here at Boeing.
Well, there's the president doing his thing, which is raising money and doing what people do in politics, which is giving speeches. And he goes to Boeing in Everett, Washington, and talks about how wonderful Boeing is, and it's a great American company, no question about it. What he should be talking about is how his union cronies have been trying to prevent Boeing from moving some of its manufacturing facilities out of Washington State to, I believe, South Carolina in order to avoid the exorbitant salaries, wages, and pensions that unions charge Boeing, and they are being blocked by the U.S. government, including Obama. They didn't want to say that, but there it is. So he says that there's new jobs created and everything's looking up and there's a pot in every kitchen or something like. There used to be a statement that there's, what was it? A chicken in every pot, right? Remember that? I think they promised during the Depression, whoever came along after the Great Depression of the early 30s, politicians were going around saying, I promise a chicken in every pot. Now, of course, things have changed in America today. Today, the Democrat politicians promise pot in every chicken. That would be medical marijuana. And so things do change through time from a chicken in every pot to pot in every chicken. But nevertheless, it's fundamentally the same kind of thing. The other night I was on a dinner party. I won't say where. And someone prominent in the media, conservative, was there. And he said after about an hour of drinking, he said, by the way, you want to hear a funny joke about Newt Gingrich? He said, Newt Gingrich's baggage is so old that it doesn't even have wheels on it. I sat there deadpan. I said, well, I told that joke first on my show. He didn't know that. It just shows you the power of the savage nation. I think it was Lao Tzu who wrote that you don't really need to get credit for your ideas as long as your ideas are circulated in society. Do you have any idea that the pebbles that I throw out into this great, great, great mind of America have ripples that go on for 20, 30 years? Do you know that? And probably long after that. Yeah, that was my joke. Newt Gingrich's baggage is so old that it has no wheels. So now people are saying it. They don't even know who originally said it. And it's the same thing. That you wait and see. You're going to hear the same thing I just said. That in the 1930s, politicians were promising a chicken in every pot. And right now the Democrats are promising pot in every chicken. It's very funny. It's something that you wouldn't even know who he is. If I make references to people, they were before my time, but I knew of them because I'm a man who studied even popular American history before I became well-known in the country. Will Rogers, no one ever heard of him anymore. No one knows who he is. But Will Rogers was a plain-spoken, comedian, really. And he'd get up on the stage with a lasso, and he would spin the lasso. He was a Westerner. And while he was doing little rope tricks, he would be telling homespun stories. People just loved him. They couldn't get enough of him. So that's the kind of story that he would have told if he were alive today. In fact, if Will Rogers were alive today, he'd probably have a microphone rather than a lasso. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What's this? Patent to patent? Leather? Okay, that's good. Vince in New York, let's see what you got to say on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Mike, can we talk?
Yeah.
Okay. You made the comment. We need more General Patton and less patent leather.
Right. That was in a book I wrote about 6 years ago.
That's right. And another thing is we need more Jack Bauer and less Matt Lauer.
I think we need more Jack Hatfield and less, well, we had to get something to rhyme with Jack Hatfield. You know who Jack Hatfield is, don't you?
No, I don't.
Oh, you insulting SOB, you. He's my character in my novel, Abuse of Power. Jack Hatfield, you haven't read my book yet and you have the nerve to call my show? Come on, I'm joking. No, you'd love that Jack Hatfield. He's the good, real McCoy. Okay, we need more Jack Hatfield and less, what's her name, Banfield. We need, what's her first name? Who, Essen? Oh, we need more Jack Hatfield and less Ashley Banfield. Now, you know, I want to mention Ashley Banfield. She's that kind of very homely girl with very big glasses. Do you know that she's back on CNN? Do you know what who she is? Does anyone remember who this woman is? She was disgraced a number of years ago when I exposed her. She was on MSNBC. She was one of the most vile reporters that ever existed in my analysis. She was seen on screen with PLO murderers on a night mission with night vision cameras and goggles out looking to kill Jews. And this Ashley Banfield went out hunting for Jews at night with the PLO at that time. And she was whispering into the microphone, which NBC played, saying, I'm on a mission in a, and we're here in a secret place. Yes, yes, we could see a missile going off into Israel right now. I was astounded that NBC had fallen to such a level that they would have such a creature on the air. Shortly thereafter, she was fired. She then did small appearances here and there. Do you know that she's been renovated, resurrected, gussied up? They put stucco over her, and she is now back on the air on CNN. But never forget who this woman is. The next time you see her, remember who she is. How in the world NBC has fallen from the heights it once enjoyed in American cultural history. NBC was an iconic media outlet. What it has become today is something that is heartbreaking to even discuss. I don't want to go into it to any further extent, but believe me, when you see a creature of this level back she's on CNN now. Can you ask yourself, can you tell me why they would put a creature like her on CNN? I mean, CNN is the Crescent News Network, that we know. So maybe she's going to do new reporting of hunting for Jews in the Middle East, and that could be her special assignment. Maybe they like that she does that, and maybe when the Iranians launch, God forbid, a nuclear weapon in Israel, she could be on the ground, you know, celebrating. We don't know what they may use her for, or at least expressing crocodile tears for the rivers of blood. You never know. You just never know what people might do in the American media. And that's why Santorum, by the way, is resonating in America. Did you hear the piece? Where's the one on Santorum where he talks about the media? Before I go out the door here, I'm on the way to dinner here. Place the Satan, the famous Satan thing. Come on.
This is a spiritual war. And the father of lies has his sights on what...
All right, I agree with him. Rick Santorum is 100% right, and I believe it's going to drive him way up in the polls. And the day that Mr. Fancy Pants gets to understand that he can't continue to play the middle and he can't turn his nose up at true conservatives is the day he might actually stand a chance to defeat Barack Obama. And I'm talking about Mr. Romney. Romney has to stop listening to his advisors and start listening to the Savage Nation. Congratulations, Rick Santorum, for speaking about the Satan in the media.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
are some of the questions for the Savage Nation today. A U.S. general has apologized for the burning of Korans by troops in Afghanistan. Now, do you think it was appropriate for one of our top combat generals to grovel like this? Rick Santorum has been attacked for calling Obama's policies a phony theology and saying that Satan is focusing on America. Do you actually agree with Santorum? Do you see American children getting longer and longer times away from school for so-called vacation? Why are kids off this week for the President's Day week and getting so much time off when they're teaching kids in China calculus in the fifth grade? What do you think of Ashley Banfield being put back on CNN after joining Palestinian murderers on a hunting mission to kill Jews 10 years ago? Remember, she was thrown off MSNBC for going on a killing mission? She's back on MichaelSavage.com, the one-stop shop for all the news and more. Top right, climate scientist admits stealing documents from conservative think tank and altering them. Coming soon, the new bestseller from Michael Savage, Trickle Down Tyranny. Go to MichaelSavage.com and take a look at it right now. Order your pre-copy while you can.
The tide is beginning to turn our way. Over the last 23 months, businesses have created 3.7 million new jobs. And American manufacturers are hiring for the first time since 1990. And the American auto industry is back. And our economy is getting stronger. And that's why we can look towards a promising future. And Boeing is an example of that.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com. Iran says they're not going to wait to act on threats. They'll do a preemptive strike. I've been warning you this is coming, and they will do it. The 15th century throwbacks will do it. The L.A. gambling mogul, Adelson, says he might give 100 mil to Gingrich or another Republican. Battle lines are being drawn over whether Obama is waging a war on religion. Millennials forced to put lives on hold. Nobody in the age range 20 to 35 are where they want to be. Teen who fought prayer banner, she's an atheist, has been given a $40,000 scholarship from the anti-church atheists. They made her into a hero. Don't miss this great article, The Jew Flu. You heard me, from Haaretz.com. The Jew Flu, the strange illness of Jewish anti-Semitism. Are you one of them? Oh, the lengths to which some people will go for attention. The Hollywood director Oliver Stone, the far-left anti-American movie god, has a son who converted to Islam, who says he's receiving, well, anti-Muslim bigotry now that he's come back to Hollywood. Harvard conference calls for eliminating the Jewish state. Harvard, anti-Jewish? Sex-changing treatment for kids on the rise. I'm reading you articles from my website, MichaelSavage.com, headlines. How about the First Lady? Weeks after a 17-day Hawaii vacation, Michelle hits the slopes. Have an aspen. It's nice to be queen. Muslims stone crum church service during worship service. Well, but it's not a religion of... Surrect 30-year-old frozen flower from the Ice Age. It's an interesting picture. You should take a look at it. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. There are other stories we should tell you about. The FBI has dumped hundreds of documents that were offensive to Muslims. The Muslim pressure groups in America have gotten the FBI in their claws, and they said that some of these descriptions were wrong. Some of these training documents called the Prophet Muhammad a cult leader. It claimed that devout Muslims have been generally violent for hundreds of years and made other controversial statements.
What else did the FBI throw out under Robert Mueller? Well, let's see. Let us see what else is in there. I'm looking through some of the reporting now for the training of our future FBI agents. Ah, an article, among other materials, showed a presentation which included a graph to track the followers of the Bible, Torah, and Quran over hundreds of years. It showed that devout followers of the Torah and the Bible becoming less violent over time, while devout followers of the Quran remaining as violent in 2010 as they were hundreds of years ago. But I guess that's not permitted in the new FBI. Not especially when you have Salam al-Mariati, president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, saying it's counterproductive to our counterterrorism work. Notice he said our counterterrorism work. Our counterterrorism work. I wonder what Salam al-Mariati's previous name and incarnation was before he joined the Muslim Public Affairs Council. See, he attended the most recent meeting with the FBI director, and they're now going to seek more feedback from the Muslim pressure group when the FBI does training guidelines. That's what we have right now. That's the country. Can it still be saved? You betcha. You betcha. Supreme Court to take up reverse affirmative action case at Texas University. Of course, it's not reverse affirmative action. No such thing as reverse bigotry. It's plain bigotry. See? Reverse affirmative action? What do you mean reverse? What does that mean? Well, what is that? It's a case brought by a white student denied a spot at the flagship campus of the University of Texas. Even though he was the top of his class, his crime was he was white. Instead, they had to put in people with lesser grades who were not white. Oh, well, that's the new America, isn't it? How do you think we have what we have now? A broad ruling in favor of the student, Abigail Fisher, could threaten affirmative action. Threaten? You mean affirmative action doesn't threaten America itself? The whole world is upside down. The whole world is upside down. Upside down. Affirmative action is anti-American. Let's hope the Supreme Court does the right thing, but who knows? Because Justice Elena Kagan is not taking part of this. And why? Well, first of all, she achieved her position as Supreme Court Justice because she's a woman and she's a super liberal. So for some reason, she's ruled on this in the past. So they've asked her to recuse herself. And recuse she shall. All this and more on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Normally today it's Chicken Curry Tuesday on the Savage Nation because I have a habit. I try to keep my habits simple. Tuesday I like to go to a certain Chinese restaurant for the chicken curry. All right, I did it again today, and I walked out. I threw the money down. I wouldn't eat it. That was it. It's the last I'm going in there. There's three other restaurants that I went to for 20 years I never go into, and I'm not going to mention them. Is it racism? I don't understand it. I say, give me the chicken curry with no grease, no oil. All right, it comes out. When they do it right, they make it dry. And I say to her, I said, listen to me, dry, no grease. And they give me the yes, comes out coated with grease. I said, look, I can't eat it. I'm sorry, no nice talk. You know, these are, how shall I put it? There are all sorts of classes of people from every country, as you well know. These people are like from Katz's delicatessen theory, which is yell at the customer who doesn't like the food. There's no subtlety here. So I said, I'm not eating it. I'm sorry. Give it back. She comes back 10 minutes later, the same dish. They must think white people are stupid. So now the owner comes over and she starts to tongue lash me. Now, needless to say, I'm not the kind of guy who takes tongue lashing easily, but I didn't react to her. I said, I'm sorry. I'm not going to eat it. She says, oh, they don't want to cook for you. I said, they don't want to cook for me? You give me a dish now that you could put in the tread of a tank? If your tank stopped running because of rust, you could take your chop suey and stick it in the tank tread. The thing would run better. It wouldn't squeak, I said in my own lingo. No, you don't have to pay. I said, all right, thank you very much. I'm not going to argue with you. I got up. No, you don't have to pay. I put down $10. I waved. I said, here, I pay. Bye-bye. Never go back. That's it. I don't understand it. If they think they're going to stay in business by doing this to people, they're crazy. People are afraid of ethnic minorities. And they figure they can do anything they want, run their mouth at you, and they make you feel that they're doing you a favor if you eat in their restaurant. You know what? There's a certain gesture for that from the Bronx that I can't project on the radio. But it consists of one hand over the other in a certain kind of gesture. That's what I'd like to say. Yeah, it's take your food and shove it. So then, but I'm still hungry. Where am I going to eat? Big deal. So I went over to an Indian buffet. Now, the danger of a buffet in the middle of the day is it'll put you to sleep if you have no self-control. I limited it to one single plate. I watched the news and I left happily. And here I am. Now, I had to share this with you to bring you down to earth. Because as Lin Yutang wrote in The Importance of Living, life consists in watching your neighbor fall off the roof and having your hair cut every 2 weeks. Now, what does that mean? It means that we can only talk so much about international affairs. But as I've said to you, Cato the Elder in ancient Rome, when he wrote about ancient Rome, the historian, he said people may, up to a certain point in ancient Rome, have cared about what Roman legion was doing what, where, and which foreign province. But at a certain point, they didn't care. And what they cared about was the pebble in their shoe, which means how much does gas cost? What about the banking crisis? Are they losing their home? Why is the school so horrible? Can it ever be saved? Why are taxes so high? I mean, those are the real issues. And then it comes back down to the election. What you have here is an advanced case of cancer of the political system. The man who can save this country or the woman has not yet appeared on the political horizon. Maybe it's your daughter. Maybe it's your son. I don't know who it is. But I know that the best and the brightest are not in the political arena. I know that for a fact. I know that the alphas never went into politics. The alphas I have known and the alphas I know are nowhere in the political arena. They're in every other arena. Doctors, lawyers, engineers, talk show hosts, you name it. They're not in politics. Politics in this country has attracted the betas and the deltas, if you know anything about Huxley, and I'm sure you do, that's all. I started this, now I have to finish it. Now with all the callers, they're lining up around the block. But I'd rather talk about ethnic restaurants and the racism towards white people. How they look at you and the food they throw at you, the gop. Because they figure white liberals will say nothing. To me, that's more important than corrupt contracting. Not all ethnic restaurants, only about 90% of them behave this way. Washington, D.C., Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, let's talk about the ethnic food. I called before. You knew I had a restaurant, a Thai restaurant. I called you a while back. And
oh, yes, I remember this from years and years ago.
You're absolutely correct. And, Mike, I just got back from Thailand, so I can tell you the double dip deal. Let me tell you how it works, okay? They have an attitude towards Americans like you owe them something, not just the fact that they got a job, but they look at us for a minimum of 15, 20% tip because their own people don't throw down a dollar on $100.
Wait, you're talking about when they have a restaurant over here?
Yeah, restaurant over here. And
okay, right. And Whitey has to leave a 20% tip.
Tip, and then if you walk away without a 20% tip, they're like, oh, that's a long guy. Falong is like a slang term for a white guy or American guy. Oh, that's a long guy. He wouldn't leave. You know, look, he only left me 10%. But wait a minute. The guy was waving his hand like the American flag looking for a glass of water. Where were you? You're scratching your butt off.
How about the white people who go into these restaurants and when they get a glass of water, they say thank you and bow down on the table with their hands together like they're having a religious ceremony?
Yeah, the phony Hindu Buddhist.
Yeah. They're all. Well, you ask for a napkin because they're very good on a single napkin. And you say, may I have another napkin? You get it. Oh, thank you. Everything to the white person. Oh, thank you. 80 times thank you. The guy gives you the food. Oh, thank you. Like, what's he in business? Then you pay him. He should say thank you to you. And they go out, the liberals, and they say, oh, thank you. Like it was the most miraculous, mystical experience of their life.
You know, Mike, in D.C., 50%, maybe more, maybe less. D.C. area, 60, 70%. They go out of their way to look like Ricky Martins when they come in, and they bow down. And, you know, you're just supposed to go in there, eat, get some service, pay the bill, right? But it's the same thing like you say. It's a magical mystery tour, and then God forbid they should learn.
You know what it is to a liberal? Going into an Asian restaurant for a liberal is the equivalent of a church attendance in their parents' generation. They think that they're doing something good for multiculturalism by attending the restaurant. and exposing themselves to the wide to the beauties of the foreign culture.
Let me tell you about Thailand also.
Have you ever seen liberals with their children in an Asian restaurant teaching them? You know, I cannot eat in a restaurant with children with coloring books, Mike. I don't know about you. There's something about ding-dong school in a restaurant. I can't take it.
They throw the bowl of rice all over. I remember going up to a guy one time.
But wait, no, let's get off that for a minute. How about children, liberals taking their children to restaurants with coloring books and Crayolas? And I mean, I'm talking upscale restaurants now.
No.
They're in there till 9:30. What are these kids on, speed? Who ever heard of a child eating at 9 or 9:30?
Mm-hmm.
I go to an Italian restaurant in Marin County, California. They're there 9 o'clock, the little people, with coloring books. And the worst part, Mike, is the parents who try to show how smart their children are by giving them a lesson at the table, like an Encyclopedia Britannica story at the table, that you should take a look. Oh, what a smart child you have. They're wonderful. Great. I'm glad you brought them out. Can't they have a cutoff time for children under the age of 10, like 9 o'clock, so I can safely go and have a meal?
And the other thing is they want it free. They want it free for the kids.
Well, they want a half children's play. But I have a friend, wait, don't get so carried away. I have a friend who goes and asks for children's portion of spaghetti, and he's a grown-up. What do you do with that?
Throw him out.
Savage.
Brokered convention? I don't even know what it is, but the possibility of a brokered Republican convention is growing as voters continue to be absolutely unhappy with the current GOP field. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to discuss this is Ryan Heckler, the CEO for FreedomWorks for America. Ryan Heckler, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you today.
So explain to the millions in my audience, the Savage Nation, what exactly is a brokered convention? What does it mean?
A brokered convention is one in which the candidates, once they get to the convention, do not have 50% plus one of the delegates. So no candidate has a majority of the delegates, which means that a competitive convention ensues in which the delegates can, after a first ballot, choose whoever they wish.
Would a brokered convention hurt or help the Republicans' chances against Obama?
Oh, I think it would definitely help the GOP's chances against Obama. I mean, you know, at this point, the GOP, the candidates currently in the race, do not represent the economic conservatives' viewpoint. You know, we have their ideology, their past record, do not reflect really the base of the Tea Party movement, which is why the Tea Party movement really is frustrated with the current choices. It's why we at FreedomWorks for America are very focused on the Senate and not on the White House. And so it's very important for, in a brokered convention, you have a real opportunity to pick someone like Paul Ryan or Marco Rubio or Senator DeMint, who led the poll that we did, to choose someone who really does unite the conservative Tea Party base with the establishment.
Who do you think could emerge from a brokered convention that could actually unite the party and defeat the far-left, out-of-step president, Barack Obama? And please don't say Jeb Bush. We don't need a dynasty.
No, absolutely not Jeb Bush. We included Jeb Bush in this poll, and he did not fare well. The leaders of our kind of unique matchup poll, we had over 36,000 so far, 36,000 activists who participated. And, right now the leaders above any of the current presidential candidates are Paul Ryan, Marco Rubio, and Senator DeMint in that order. And I think each of them, has support from the establishment, but would really excite the base in a way that would drive support for the nominee. Because right now, honestly, none of the current candidates can win. And so against Barack Obama, none of them excite the base. None of them really have a record of standing up to the establishment, and none of them is really going to change anything. And so we need somebody who will stand up for principle over party. And these three candidates, I think, who I mentioned, are individuals who could do that and could also appeal to the more establishment types.
In your opinion, what is the most important issue to voters in this election?
I think the most important issue to voters is definitely cutting spending. It's, you know, we have a society, a government that's run out of control. And it's on both sides of the aisle. You know, we have a government that truly believes that it should be the one making all the decisions, you know, that a person should be making, really honestly, with his wallet. And we really need to cut spending. We really need to get our government under control. And I think that's really what the issue is. The current candidates in this race have a record of not cutting spending. I mean, they have a record of truly believing that government is good and that government has all the answers as long as they're the ones who are in charge. And that kind of technocratic sort of viewpoint is not in line with the activists in this country, which is why, you know, people are, you know, really want someone else, someone new. And it's why, honestly, you know, Freedom Works for America organization is focused on creating a conservative Senate, such as, you know, electing individuals like Ted Cruz or Richard Murdoch against Richard Lugar and defeating Orrin Hatch so that we can, you know, hold the president's feet to the fire, whoever they may be.
Here's a crazy question. Can this country be saved or is it too late? Saved from the left-wing radicals running it now.
I absolutely think this country can still be saved. You know, we're definitely it's a long fight ahead. But really, you know, the major thing, we need a leader and we need a government that wants to structurally change the way things function. You know, the type of crony capitalism, the type of massive spending needs to go away. The power of lobbyists needs to go away. We need fundamental change. And it's not going to happen with the current slate of candidates. And it's not going to happen even if we just elect a Republican Senate. What we need is a conservative House and a conservative-run Senate and a conservative president.
Ryan Heckler, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you today. You can find out more. You can take the poll at www.teapartydelegate.com and visit and learn more about Freedom Works for America at freedomworksforamerica.org.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We're talking about the demise of food in so many restaurants. Not all. Mainly these, I would have to say mainly the cheaper restaurants are going, they're going downhill really fast. They used to give you value for your money. I don't know what it meant. What, I don't know. I do. Rice is expensive. So they take it out on the dish. So today I told you there was the last straw with a 25-year relationship in a restaurant. I walked out and paid. I wouldn't eat it. Three times I said, I don't eat grease and oil. What are you looking at me? And they looked you right in the eye. Yes, Mike, we know. And they bring it out saturated, rolling in oil. I said no oil. She made it dry last week. Brings it back again bad. I mean, I don't really need to eat egg foo old, you know, to enjoy myself. And I could do without the pigeon curry. I understand that the losers in Beijing from the Chinese team will become one's beaten kidney over rice as the dish, not as the diner. And there's nothing I can do about it. No one's calling about Chinese restaurants. I'm not going to eat there anymore. I'm finished. It's over. I can't do it anymore. If they look you in the eye and they know you for 20 years and they say yes and they bring it out greasy and look you in the eye and say it's not greasy, are you going to go back to a place like that? These are intelligent people. I know the owners. Why would they do this to me? And I'm not mentioning the name of the place on Sansome Street off Broadway. I will not do that. I will not do that. Not at all. Sacramento, Ron, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Hey, my younger brother worked for a big-name pest control company, and he used to go into the Asian restaurant and spray early in the mornings before anybody showed up. And the night before, they would take the meat, the chicken, the pork, the beef out of the deep freeze to defrost overnight, these big plastic tubs. Well, when he would come in the morning to flip on the night, a billion roaches would just run in every direction. They were all over the meat. So
You mean they were defrosting in the bag or outside the bag?
They were defrosting inside large plastic tubs in the open with roaches crawling all over.
Oh, God in heaven.
That makes you hungry for Chinese food, huh?
Oh, my God. I can't take it anymore. I know people who won't eat that food. I can't help it. I have a real love for it, but I'm finished with it. It's over.
Horrible.
It's horrible. What am I going to wind up in, Arby's? Or I don't know where to eat anymore. I think fast food is safer than these restaurants lately. If I go to Burger King on the weekend and I get like a grilled chicken sandwich, it's probably safer than most of the food I'm eating. I don't know what I'm going to tell you. I can't raise my own beef. As far as I go now, I have only tomatoes and fruit. For a kid from the Bronx, it's a miracle for me to see a fruit grow. I had peaches from my orchard. I had apricots. I was like an Abkhazian. Talk about the Caucasus, you know, the long-lived people of Abkhazia. Remember that story in the 70s? That the longest-lived people on Earth were from the Caucasus? And then the researchers went there trying to find out what was their secret to long life. One said it was apricot seeds, apricots and apricot pits, and blah, blah. We know apricots are phenomenal in beta-carotene, but we don't eat the seeds. You got to grind up the seeds to get a little of the hydrocyanic acid, a little bit of the cyanide, which quenches the cancer cells because they metabolize oxygen at a higher rate than normal cells, which is why you're supposed to eat apple seeds and some other foods which have the same mini amounts of the hydrocyanic acid, which is a small amount of cyanide. It's an interesting, I mean, it's very interesting. It connects to the old disgrace theory of Laetrile, but there's actually scientific reason behind eating foods that were once traditional in the American diet, such as apple seeds, for example. Or I'll give you another one. What's that one? Lima beans. No one eats lima beans anymore, but they were once a pretty big staple of the American farm diet. Lima beans contain hydrocyanic acid. I wrote books on this 25 years ago. You know, I studied this in great detail, but I still try to eat some of those foods. You look at the average American diet, it's quite limited. They eat a very narrow band of foods, the average American, with very, very few vegetables and fruits. And that's one of the reasons we have such horrendous, tremendous rates of congenital diseases in this country. It's related to the denatured foods. And this is an old story to those of you who have listened to me for years and grew up years ago in the health food movement like I did, and understood the great genius of Linus Pauling and so many of the other pioneers. And I've not forgot any of the lessons I learned and taught over the years, and I'm not going to. If you think I'm going to turn to a pill for every problem, you're mistaken. It's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally. It's why I wrote Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. It's why I wrote so many other books. And it's what makes me, I'm going to finish in a political way, it's why I come on the show. In many ways, what I give you politically is the whole grain version of the political story. In most of the other media, what you're getting is the refined white bread version. Here you're getting the whole wheat version of the story. So if you want the whole grain version of any political story, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. Tim, WTNT, Washington, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, I wanted to ask you, every once in a while I'll hear you recapped and the best of Michael Savage, and you are so good when you talk about food, your mother, the things you miss from New York City. I grew up in Jersey, so I'm very familiar with a lot of the things that you talk about. Anything that comes to mind, I would love to hear.
You mean what I miss from my childhood?
Yeah, what you miss from food.
Well, there's nothing in New York that I particularly can't get now. What do I, you know, God bless people in New York, but I live where I can get anything I really want. What I want is not a physical need right now. It's a spiritual need. It's not going to be found in a restaurant. But if you ask me what I miss, the first thing that comes to my mind, you want to hear what I miss the most from my childhood? The number one thing, you want to hear it, is the image of snow falling against storm windows outside my little bedroom, my cubicle on Utopia Parkway. It was one of the greatest times of my life was the first snowfall that came in, and you're in that warm room with the steam on. Now, you know how big that room was that I had? This is amazing. Those row houses that we grew up in, the brick houses, they were 20 feet wide. They were, the whole property was 100 feet deep, so the house must have been, I don't know, 50 of it? It couldn't have been more than 50, 20 wide. You had a little hallway the size of a thin person, which included a closet. You then had a staircase going up. To the right was the so-called living room. Next to it was the so-called dining room, and next to that was the so-called kitchen, a pantry kitchen and a little sitting area. And upstairs were the master bedroom, which is the size of a Beverly Hills dental hygienist closet, then two bedrooms for the children. I had the smaller bedroom. I don't know how big it was. It couldn't have been more than, if you laid on the floor, it couldn't have been more than 7 feet long. And, it was probably 10 by seven, like a jail cell, in other words. The prisoners at Guantanamo have a bigger space than I did in that house, but I didn't know it. What did I care? It was a cozy little room. But it looked out on a very busy street like Utopia Parkway, and the buses rumbled by all the time. Now, come the winter, you put in the storm windows. That's what I like. That was a big thing. You get them out of the basement. Dad would get the storm windows out of the basement. Why? Well, the storms are coming. And they made sense. You took out the screens and you put in the storm windows. And they went in right over the steam. They don't even make heat like that anymore. I like the hiss. I like to hear that hissing all night long. Anyway, you had the storm window. So when that snow would come and the windows would somewhat freeze over, the snowflakes against the window with a rumbling Q44A, there was nothing like it. I could use it right now. I'm thinking of buying a lodge again. I'm going through the doldrums. I'm trying to think what I want to do with the rest of my life now. So I'm not sure. I think I do want to get the Savage Lodge. I'm going through that fantasy again. I don't like serving people. I'm going to sit there and polish glasses and listen to, you know, would it really work? I'm going to eat sandwiches with people I don't know? I mean, I'm a loner when it comes down to it. I don't know. It sounds like a Timberline Lodge. It's rough hewn. It's got, you know, log lodge, 25 rooms, no more. You know, the animals, the dogs, you know, like Sergeant Preston of the Yukon's plane is sitting in the lake with the pontoons. And in the spur of the moment, I and the pilot can take off because I can't fly a plane. And I have like a retro Chris Craft redo that's perfect mahogany shining with canvas over it, waiting to zip me across the lake to Zeke's house or something. What do I know? How long would this fantasy last? I don't know. I'm a dreamer, so therefore I don't think I'll do it. I wouldn't mind a lodge, but who says I have to be there all the time? I don't want to have to be in a lodge. It'd be fun. It would be fun in a way to have all. But what if it's conservatives, but you get a lib in there just to disturb people? What if you get one of those big-hatted women who look like Barbara Boxer who comes there just out of spite to shoot her Brooklyn mouth off at everybody in the bar? Well, you could take her on a Sicilian fishing trip in the Chris Craft. That is true. You could invite her out, and if she doesn't want to go, you get out the rug, and you roll her up, and you take her for a ride, like a cigar. And you hope that, and that solves the problem, because you can rent the room again. Well, I wouldn't do that. I'm a fun-loving man. I'm nice to people. I let flies out of window screens. What are you talking about here?
This is a spiritual war, and the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies, Satan, would have his sights on. A good, decent, powerful, influential country, the United States of America. If you were Satan, who would you attack in this day and age? There is no one else to go after other than the United States. And that's been the case for now almost 200 years, once Americans' preeminence was sown by our great founding fathers.
Denise in Seattle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael?
Yes.
How are you? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask.
Oh, God. Come on, please, don't ask me how I am. What's your point?
Oh, well, don't get mad at me.
Oh, hey, please, that's number two. One more and you're out. Please, Denise, make your point.
I wanted to know how old your mom was when she came to you in your dream.
My God. She was younger. She was much younger.
To ask you, because my dad has come to me and he's just glowing and he's much younger.
Yeah, I mean I could be very mundane about it now and knock the whole thing out and get away from the spiritual, and I don't want to do it because it was a beautiful moment, but I don't know if it's real. Because I think the reason I saw her in my dream is because I found a cube with pictures in it, like was like hidden away, a cube from when she was young, when my kids were young. And I looked at it the other day, and I marveled at how beautiful she was, God bless her soul. So maybe it's just looking at the picture comes back. Who knows? That's the this is the beautiful thing about being a human being. We don't know any of the answers to this. So you may as well imagine there's a heaven. You may as well imagine that you're punished if you're bad. And he knows when you've been happy. He knows. Ding-a-ling, here's the peppermint. He knows when you've been good or bad. So be good for goodness sake. Hey, Bing Crosby, snowman, mama in the thing, and daddy, and everyone's normal. The people were in the closet. The other one, the bad guys were caught. The cops hit him with the clubs and put him away, and there were no bad people. I understand the postcard view of life. It's not the way it is unless you want to live in that world, and you can. Who's to stop you from living in that world? He knows when you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. You know, all right, so you could live in that. Tell your children about Santa Claus if you want. Or if you don't want, then turn your child into a sick gothic who'll get black fingernails and hit some